Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Welcome back and happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well, but you know, it's funny. I haven't been in this seat for quite a long time, and so I'm feeling kind of nervous today. My heart's pounding. My mouth's a little dry. I feel like it's my first day on the air.
Well, welcome back.
Thank
Sounds
you.
Like you had a great trip.
I've had a fabulous trip, and in some ways it really hasn't ended because although I'm here in the studio today, my heart and my show are still coming to you from the road. I still have a couple weeks of interviews that I'm going to be sharing with you from the adventure, so I'm really excited about that. And it's interesting because over the weeks, I was perfecting this, doing the shows on the road, and I found that one of the best places to do the introductions to the show each week was in the front seat of my car. So I feel like I'm in a really large space talking in here because I'm used to being the front seat of my car.
Randall, our news director, has tried various places that make it sound kind of studio-ish, and he's found that in a hotel closet with like lots of clothes around him, he gets a nice deadened sound.
It's what we do to bring stories to you week after week after week. So how have you been?
It's been a stressful summer. My mother-in-law has moved from, it's a short move, but Grover Beach to Arroyo Grande to be closer to us. So it's only about a 6-mile move, but still moving. I think even moving next door is stressful and a lot of work. So that's been going on. The big move was about 2 weeks ago, but we're still unpacking boxes and dealing with all of that.
Well, and it's interesting because when we look at life, we have the list of stressors. You know, there's a list of things that are most stressful in our lives, and death, you know, losing someone is right up there. But divorce and moving are in those top three. And whether it's short or long, you still have to pack up your life. You have to think about, you know, what you're going to keep and what you're going to let go. And
yeah, and there's a lot of not only just backbreaking work, but also emotional, because this was a house that her husband had built, and he's since passed on. So there was emotion saying goodbye to that custom-built house. And it was a large house moving into a much smaller house. And so things are having to be gotten rid of for everything to fit. And so, yeah, lots of emotion and a lot of stress, like, you know, dealing with utilities, dealing with moving the internet, moving the cable, and getting the new phone to work and the gas and all that. So then this is a brand new home, so you can't just say turn the gas on. You have to, like, arrange to have a guy come out and hook up the pipes and all that.
Exactly. It is. It's a lot of detailed work. And I think just listening to you talk about all the steps and all the things you have to think about makes me even happier that I had this time this summer to really kind of put all that beside or onto the side, because that day-to-day stress is a lot to carry, even just regular keeping up with their jobs or keeping up with their families. Then you add something big and emotional, like a life transition, and it's a lot to carry. And it's why I keep stressing to you week after week how important it is to step away from our life, to step away from our day-to-day, so that you can get some perspective and you can refresh and revitalize yourself so that you have the energy to come back and face those challenges and those stresses. So that's kind of what it's all about for me, or what this journey was for me over the summer. I'm continuing building off of last week. We were in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, talking to the furries and talking to Randy of Randyland, which still makes me smile when I think about it. And today we continue the journey across the state of Pennsylvania into Honesdale, Pennsylvania, which is technically in the Poconos. Honesdale is actually really close to the border of New York also, and it becomes the Catskills. The same mountains become the Catskills when you cross into New York. I love this area. I love being in the Catskills, Poconos mountain area. I have friends there up in the area of Delhi, and I've made more friends over the last few weeks. I have history there. I was actually born in upstate New York, in Auburn, New York, and lived on Lake Skaneateles, which is a little farther in New York State. So I think part of my soul must reside along the Finger Lakes or in that area of New York, because I always have felt a strong connection to this place. I've always felt this really strong connection to the land, just to the whole feeling of it. I don't know. I always feel connected and pulled back. I also, you know, at this point in my travels, I was bouncing between the mountains, the Poconos and Catskills, and the Jersey Shore, where I also have connections and family and history. We have a family home there. And although I'd been going there my entire life, it's the first time I've ever been there for a long period of time by myself in this house. So it was an interesting 3 weeks to be bouncing between the mountains and the shore, and very, you know, privileged experience, of course. And it was interesting because the beginning of this adventure was about adventure, right? It was about seeing new places and meeting new people and driving solo for the first time across the country from Kansas East. It was, you know, I had this like mixed feeling of excitement, fear, curiosity, a lot of adrenaline, feeling very empowered. You know, it was a really incredible experience. And then now entering this middle part of the journey, this has been much more about like reflecting, relaxation, finding calm and peace, the sense of serenity in these areas, the sense of being in the familiar, not really going into too many new places, feeling grounded. It's interesting, you know, I became very settled in my solitude at this part of the journey, this 3 weeks, even though I was surrounded by a town that I had grown up with on the Jersey Shore and friends that I knew up in the mountains, it felt very solo. It felt very quiet, but not alone, definitely not lonely. It's amazing to be so alone with my thoughts for such a long period of time. Felt like an incredible luxury to go weeks. I mean, I didn't even listen to the radio while I was driving in the car for hours and hours, because to just be alone with my thoughts and kind of like being in my thoughts and whatever was coming up. It's interesting how there is so much noise and expectations in our day-to-day, things that we're responsible for. And Hank talked about, you know, taking care of his mother-in-law and helping her move. And, you know, I have my children and my grandchildren, and my husband and my family and my work. I mean, all those things, there's a lot of voices that are in our head and in our lives day-to-day. And so I was a little anxious at first, knowing I was going to be alone for so long. But then as I got more used to the solitude, the more I really liked it. I started to kind of crave the alone, crave the quiet. You know, and I guess I imagine that people spend thousands of dollars traveling to exotic places trying to purchase that same sense of complete immersion in just beauty and calm and peacefulness that I was feeling in this time. I know I'm probably sounding a bit dramatic and waxing on and on, but I'm not quite sure how to express this experience that I've had in words, because it was a felt experience, and because I was having it alone, it was very internal. And so all of it just kind of sank in past my conscious to this very deep unconscious place. So clearly, this time on the road has been, I guess, transformative for me in a lot of ways. I already am thinking about next, you know, summer and places I want to go. But I still have these couple of weeks to share with you. And that's really the theme for today's show. Our conversation is a bit about transformation, a bit about visualizing, a bit about creating a life that calls us but isn't really what we see in the day-to-day or read about every day. I think, you know, for a lot of us, there is this feeling that maybe the life that we're leading isn't exactly what we wanted it to be, or, you know, is more than we anticipated or not as much as we anticipated. And we know there's something else out there. We might be hearing the call of other things, but we're not quite sure how to make it happen. And so today's show is kind of about visualizing and creating what that life looks like. And I guess one of the things that stood out for me in the conversations I had with Mary Pfeiffer, if you recall, that's who I visited with in Lincoln, Nebraska, and interviewed a couple weeks ago. One of the comments she made was about that we only see and hear celebrity stories, right? Or people in power, politicians, people who are wealthy. You know, we see those stories and we hold them up as this kind of measure of success. In some ways, our American dream has focused on replicating the excess and materialism and overblown version of the American dream that we see in celebrity culture, that we see in just on television or in the media. And we really never hear the stories of the rest of the world, right? We don't really hear from the 99% who are keeping it together every day in their day-to-day. We don't hear from those who have carved out and created really satisfying and meaningful lives, either within or outside of the mainstream. And this idea really stood out to me. Because it touched on one of the reasons that I actually do this show week after week, and one of the reasons that I did this road trip was to have the chance to meet with and talk to and share the stories of regular people living their version of normal. Because my great concern is that we are sold a really narrow version of normal, of what is okay, of what is the right way to be, and that actually the way we're living is a large spectrum of normal. So today's show is a great example of finding life on our own terms, living in an authentic way, getting back to the basics of life and getting in touch with the earth. And that's what I saw from Denver to the Jersey Shore. Between all the big cities along the way was great open space dotted with farms and regular people trying to keep it all together. There's a lot of poverty in the midsection of the country, but there's also a ton of beauty. Maybe it's because we're in California and we've seen a lot of brown, but to drive across the country and just see the rolling plains and hills of green and grass and hay and corn and these beautiful silos and farms, it just emanates peacefulness and wholeness and family to me. So what took me to the Poconos originally and to this organic farm where we had the conversation was to visit my daughter's boyfriend, Clark, who's working as an intern on this farm. He had wanted to have an experience learning about living off the land and getting back to nature. And he had found this opportunity to WOOF, which is Willing Work on Organic Farm, a farm where you exchange room and board for working and learning about it. And so he ended up on this farm, and I was driving up through that area, and I said, I'll come visit you. And so I came to the farm, and there I met Dave and Christine Campo. And I was so immediately impressed with their integrity, their commitment to living on their own terms, to being authentically who they are, and they're young. They're in their 30s. So I was excited to see them. I knew as soon as I started talking to Dave, I said, Dave, I need to do a show with you. We need to get this down because I want people to hear your story. I want them to hear who you are. So today, I'm really excited to share with you this show from the farm. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I'm doing things a little differently today. We won't be taking calls, but you can always participate in the show by liking our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or follow us on our Instagram page. We've been posting photos of the trip along the way. You can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to our previous shows, my interviews with Mary Pfeiffer, last week's show from Pittsburgh, a show from North Dakota, South Dakota, and all of our other shows by visiting us at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. You can podcast our shows through iTunes or the podcast app on your device, and they'll upload shows to you every week. However you want to chime in, I'm always happy to hear from you and what's on your mind. So you're listening to Public Radio KCBX, and I am happy to introduce you to Dave and Christine Campo from Honesdale, PA.
Grow deep, 'cause it's all grown naturally.
So you are the quintessential millennials, right on the edge of millennials, maybe a hair older than the millennials. But you are the age of the generation that is questing to kind of shake things up away from the typical American story of go to college, get a corporate job, buy in suburbia and live out your life. So what brought you away from that path to this path?
Well, after I had graduated college, I took some just jobs locally and was like seeking out a more of a steady job. And I was just employed temporarily to make some funds so I could pay my student loans. And then I got to a point where I was unemployed and I was kind of depressed. And I was just like asking myself the question of like, you know, what am I really here to do? What is my purpose, you know? And I was looking around and at the situation you're talking about, people buying homes in suburbia, a lot of them take big loans and have to have all this debt to pay. And I was like, is that something I really want? And I answered that question as no. And then I was also thinking, like, even if I bought a property and I bought it outright, you know, I was like, why would I have to pay property tax and all this? And I was like, I don't understand all these things. So I started researching into a lot of things. And then in that research, it was kind of like a big spiritual quest. And I was researching a lot of different facets of different things, all different areas. And then I basically was like searching for something that I thought that I could do that I would feel good about, and that was like an honorable job, something that, you know, really resonated with me. And in my research, I had found out about how terrible our food system is and things like that, and how many toxins and just bad things are in the food, and how far it has to travel to get to the mouth that is going to eat it. And so I decided, you know, when I learned about all that, I decided, wow, you know, farming's probably one of the most honorable jobs I can think of. And I was actually inspired by another high school acquaintance, I would say. I wasn't really my friend. We didn't really care for each other that much. But he was working for another farm in a farmer's market. And he had told me it was the most honorable profession he could think of. And that really struck a chord with me. So I decided, hey, you know, maybe I want to give that a shot. And so I started growing a home garden at my parents' house when I was still living there. And then I started looking for a place to farm. In exchange for land, that was my main concern. I wanted to find a place to where I could work for an exchange for property and have it debt-free. So then I ended up finding this place, Old School Farm, and came up here and started working the farm.
So where are you from originally? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, about 20 miles north of Doylestown.
My great-grandmother is from Doylestown.
Yeah, cool.
And so where did you go to college? And what it, you know, so it sounds like you started off on kind of the traditional path. So what, before you kind of veered off post-college, what did you go to college to study? What were you thinking you were going to do?
Well, the story goes, when I came out of high school, I had really good grades. I graduated 6th in my class. I was a scholar athlete, and I had all these awards for football and baseball, and I was recruited by a lot of different schools to colleges, so like college was just something that was pushed on me, you know. And I had wanted to go to college at the time. The idea of like partying and having fun was cool, and I was like, yeah, you know. So I looked around at a lot of different schools that had been recruiting me for football and baseball, and decided on this small liberal arts school called Ursinus College. And I had no idea, you know, I just knew that college was the next step, so I went, but I had no idea what I really wanted to do. I knew I didn't want to go into biology and chemistry and that kind of stuff because I always have trouble with the minute details and a lot of memorization. I'm more of an overall concept kind of guy. So after taking some courses there, I went into anthropology, sociology, and was an anthropology, sociology major with a minor in art history. And originally I had wanted to get into the field of archaeology, but it just didn't work out the way I had wanted it to. So,
and so archaeology kind of moves aside. You do a lot of research. I mean, you seem to be someone who very thoughtfully approaches decisions that you make, and you found your way here to Old School Farm. So what is your day-to-day life like here? What are your responsibilities?
Well, my responsibilities, I live in the house that the owner owns, so my responsibilities are to take care of the house. I have to do all the property maintenance that you would normally do at a normal home, like cut the grass and keep it looking half decent. And then I have some animals to look after. We have chickens and turkeys. We have some sheep and some bees. So I have to keep after them. So they got to be fed and watered every day. Then we have, I don't know, about an acre and a quarter, acre and a half of vegetable plots. So a lot of my responsibility is planting, harvesting, processing those foods up. Because this farm isn't necessarily a production farm. It's more started as a hobby farm. So a lot of my job is to put up food for the family that owns the farm. So I do a lot of canning, blanching and freezing of vegetables and other processes to save the food. Then I also have other building projects around, like I build a cabin for interns and put in a commercial kitchen so we could maybe sell some of our canned goods. Now we're doing a wood-fired pizza night every other Friday night. So I build a cob oven for that and put in a small kitchen. So I'm kind of like a handyman here. I do a little bit of everything. I'm not just farming vegetables. I'm building stuff, fixing stuff. So I pretty much have to to do all the different tasks that you would on a farm, except during the summer months. Luckily, I have Clark here right now, and we usually try and get between 2 and 3 interns every year during the summer months. And most of them are college students, so they come usually from very end of May, early June, and stay through mid-August, sometimes later into September, depending if they're out of college or not. So one of my other tasks is to keep them busy, manage them, and try and teach them as much as I can while they're here, because they're here to learn, and I want to make sure that they learn as much as they can from me.
And so what kind of things, I mean, I'm sure it's an endless, but what are some things that you've learned about farming from, hey, this could be an honorable profession, to the realities of farming? Like, what's been the learning curve for you?
Well, fortunately, I've been able to work with this other great guy, Roger Hill, who's been an organic farmer for 30 years, so I've been able to glean a lot of information off of him. But when I first started farming, like, I didn't know much about cover cropping systems and, like, really how to manage soil all that greatly. It was more like, all right, I'm just going to till this plot up and then plop in some plants and maybe put down some mulch for weed control and then, you know, grow and harvest them. But now I look at it as more of, like, an overall approach as to how, like, the soil microbiology is working and how all that stuff works and practices that we can use to increase soil fertility and get better production, more nutrient-dense vegetables. And I've also been learning a lot more about systems that you can put in place more along the permaculture lines, where you don't have to put so many inputs in to get your outputs. So
what's an input?
An input, it could be labor, it could be fertilizer, but mostly any kind of energy source that you have to input. So, like, if you're doing annual crops, a lot of times you have to, like, plow a plot, and then you have to till it, and then, you know, you plant your vegetables, and then you're weeding and hoeing all the time, whereas if you move more towards perennial systems, perennial plants, they come back every year. So once they're planted, you just have to manage them. You don't have to start the seed every year. And once they get established, they pretty much take care of themselves, and so you have to put a lot less inputs into perennial plants to keep them going than you do in an annual production. So I've just been learning more about those types of systems, like how we can grow more fruit, nuts, berries. We have a lot of asparagus here because they're a perennial crop. Crops that, you know, we don't need as much care and maintenance because, you know, trying to manage a couple acres of vegetables by yourself can get pretty work intensive. Whereas if you switch to these other systems and try and mimic nature a little bit, you can cut some of that work out and have more time to spend with your family and do things that you enjoy while getting bigger yields and whatnot. So
how has this kind of ideal of I want to do this honorable profession to the reality of doing it, is it what you hoped it would be? You know, do you still feel committed to this life that you've chosen?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not making as much money as I would like, and I'm not like a big money guy or anything, but there's also the reality that you need to have enough to support your family. And now with my son and that I'm married, I came up here, I was originally single, so now I have two other people that I have to support. So I'm not totally attached to the farming life. I really love it, and I really enjoy it, and I want to continue growing food for my family. But at the same time, at this point, I'm kind of looking other directions of how I can create more of a passive residual income that would allow me to do farming as more of a hobby and like a food source rather than my main source of income. But like I said before, the farm is mainly a hobby farm, so I'm basically running it for someone else, so it's not my own either, so I don't have the freedom to do everything that I would do if it was my own, and I have to do a lot of other projects besides the farming. So that's one of the reasons I don't feel like so attached to it right now. Mm-hmm. But I definitely want to continue growing and, you know, putting up food for my family. For sure.
And so you talked about, you know, finding this place where you could work for exchange for land. Have you accumulated property for yourself then through the years you've been here? And how long have you been here?
This is my fifth full season here, but I also worked one summer season. The first season, the original barn here had burnt down, and there was the animals that we had, the chickens and turkeys that were in there. Of course, they all died in the fire. So there was no animals to take care of, so there was no need for me to be here full time. So I commuted actually 100 miles from Bucks County every other week and worked like 60 hours or so in that week and just maintained the gardens and processed all that food and put it up for the winter. And then the next year we had a barn built to replace the one that had burnt down. And then I moved up here full time, and now this is my fifth full season up here.
And so do you have property now that's your own that you've acquired through the years of work?
Yes, I actually am the owner of 4 acres that is attached to the farm here. So I did acquire that. So now it's about finding the funds and resources to build a small house for my family and myself.
God made a farmer, wasn't like any other man, tender hearted, pulling barbed wire, dragging a plow across his land.
If you're just tuning in, I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We're bringing you this show from the road. We're at an organic farm in Honesdale, Pennsylvania. I'm actually back in the studio, but I'm bringing you these shows from the road as I finish up my adventure this summer. So we're doing things a little bit differently. We're not taking calls, but you can always be a part of the conversation by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can find us on our Facebook page or at kcbx.org. And as we continue our conversation with Dave and Christine Campo, we talk about how they met. And it's really a wonderful story that they shared about finding love and how we can often find love in the most unlikely of places. And so you talk about your beautiful family. Can you talk about how you guys met, you and Christine?
Sure. Well, the owner of the farm, Al Benner, his wife had hired Christine as an au pair to take care of his two boys. I believe they were 5 at the time, correct?
Yes.
They were 5 years old. So she came over here on a program through Au Pair America to work for 1 year as an au pair, taking care of his twin boys. And one time that I was coming up early on when I was working with Al, I wasn't living here yet or anything, I came up and he had told me that his au pair would be up and whatnot. And so I pulled up the drive, I got out of my car, and she was on top of our one little rooftop garden, like right back over there. And, you know, she was like, hello, and I said hi. And that first weekend that we met, we got to go up to the neighbors for like a camping cookout around the, you know, fire pit, and we had some burgers and whatnot and some wine. And so we got to talking, and part of my like spiritual transformation, I had become a Christian, so I knew I was looking for a Christian woman, and I found out Christine was Christian. And she was in Philadelphia most of the time, and I knew that she didn't really know anyone or anything. And I lived close enough to Philadelphia that I knew some things to do down there. So I had started emailing her, asking her if she wanted to, you know, just go out to some museums or something. So we started hanging out, and then just kind of became really good friends, and then it went from there.
And so how long have you been together?
That's one for you to answer.
There you go. Yeah. And Christine, so what Dave didn't say is you're from Germany, correct?
Yes, okay. Yes, I'm from Germany.
And so when what drew you to wanting to do Au Pair America and come to this country? And then what made you link up with this guy?
Well, I was just about to finish up college and I didn't have plan what to do. I studied theology and educational science, so it's not like you finish up college and then you know exactly what you have to do with your degree. So I was thinking, well, what could be the next step? And I was kind of, you know, wanted to do something fun. And my best friend, she had the plan first to go to the USA as an au pair. So I thought, that sounds actually really good. And so I applied and came to the USA.
And so I'm sure it wasn't your intention to meet the person that you would spend the rest of your life with. So how was it for you and for your family when you realized, oh no, I need to go back and live with this man and be his wife and make a family here on the farm?
Yeah, my mom still jokes that I told her before I went to the USA as an au pair that I would never get married to an American. Actually, I was really not planning on living my life in the USA, but he was just the best man I've ever met, and I wanted to be with him, and my family totally understood that, and my mom supported me totally, and I miss my home country, and I would love to go back to visit. I have to wait for my green card, but it's just, I always tell my mom I would always marry him again, even though I miss my family, my friends, I would marry him again.
And so how has life been for you as the wife of an organic farmer? I guess you would be an organic farm wife yourself. Yeah. How have you changed and grown since you've been up here?
Well, I'm definitely got more into the organic lifestyle, organic food, organic skincare, organic everything organic. And I actually love it. It's really, if you grow your own stuff, it tastes really way more delicious than even the stuff you get at the supermarket, which is labeled organic. It's just really enjoyable living here on this farm. Even though we're living not in our own house, we're living in the owner's house. That's probably the only thing I would like to change, to have our own place where we could do whatever we want to do. But besides that, It's just really nice life, simple, nice life.
Talk a little bit about the home that you've created, because before, when we first started talking, you mentioned the birth of your son and that you actually had him here at the farm. And again, for hundreds and hundreds of years of human history, or thousands of years, that's how we had children. We just had them at home and with the help of a midwife maybe, or your parent. And then we went through this medical model practice of everything, child rearing and living. But now you've kind of returned a little bit to the original kind of path of life of having your child at home. What was that like, and how did you decide to have a home birth?
Well, it was pretty much clear from the very first moment that we want to have, or that I wanted to have, or give birth at home, because it's just, it's simple. It's the air, the surrounding. I know it's like, even you could even say the germs are just the germs I'm used to. And it was, I didn't want to be in a room, stuck in a room for you never know how many hours and then just wait till you give birth. So actually it was pretty clear from the very beginning, and very enjoyable, I have to say. I did still chores when I was in labor, and I was running around, and it was a beautiful sunny Sunday, and I noticed in the morning that I woke up and I told David, I think it might happen today that we're gonna become parents. And yes, then we got him pretty much in 10 hours.
We've been brainwashed to believe that we can't do any of the normal human functions without some sort of medical intervention on all fronts. So I think one of the most interesting things about kind of the life that you're leading and a lot of people of your generations is that you're questioning what you've been taught as the way things have to be and kind of rewriting your truth. Does that sound right?
Totally. I mean, in college, I was taught all kinds of different theories on things and whatnot. And I totally bought into them, because in school, if you want to get a good grade on the test, you better give the answers the teachers or professors want. So I always gave them what they wanted. And most of the time in school, I was just studying things just to pass class and get a good grade. I didn't really say, care that much. I cared about my grade. I didn't really necessarily care about all the subject matter I was learning. There were certain classes that I really was into, and then other classes it was just like, all right, I'm just going to do this. So, yeah, once I started doing my own research, I realized that a lot of what I had been taught was false. So as I came to that, it was kind of hard to overcome that, because then you're like, well, I've been lied to a lot. So, but once you like realize that and you find out some truths for yourself on your own research, then it's a lot easier to question things as you go along. So I question almost everything now, and do my own research and look at both sides of an argument, and then I try and come to a decision based on, you know, which side has the best argument. And if neither of them have the best argument, and I find that the research shows it falls somewhere in between, you know, then I take that stance. But I just really think self-education is really the most powerful tool, because when you're learning out of your own desire, and when you really have a strong desire for truth, I think you will get there. As the scriptures say, seek and ye shall find, knock and ye shall enter. So I look at that as how a truth applies too. If you don't care about the truth and you're looking into a subject, you might not find it, because you really have to do some digging and some wading through a lot of BS until you get to the right spot. So yeah, and these days I question everything, and I do my own research to the best of my abilities, and I feel like the internet has really made that possible. Not that you can trust everything on the internet, but if you know how to use it right, there's a lot of really good scholarly sources that you can access.
First, we will continue our conversation and visit with Dave and Christine on the farm shortly.
God made a farmer. Wasn't like any other man, tender-hearted, pulling barbed wire, dragging a plow across his land. God made a farmer. He gets up early and he stays up late. He seeds and feeds, weeds and breeds, bleeds and weans and rakes. He'll spend his lifetime praying for rain, and his prized possession is his good name. Three generations of FFA running through his blood and soul, and he plants his crops row by row in the heartland sun. He'll watch them grow. Yet God didn't cut any corners that day. He made a farmer.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're doing things a little differently this week. Although I'm in the studio today, I'm still bringing you another show from the road. And today, we're exploring the hard work, the satisfaction, the struggles, and the peace that's found living outside of the mainstream rat race and trying to make it on an organic farm. So during the course of my travels this summer, I found myself in the Poconos with Dave and Christine Campo, and I got to spend a day sitting with them under their recently harvested garlic hanging from the rafters outside next to the handmade cob oven Dave was talking about, where they make pizzas, organic pizzas, and every other Friday they invite the community in to have pizza. We were listening to the chickens and the sheep and different birds and just the breeze. It was an incredible bucolic day sitting with them and their new baby. So in the next part of our conversation, we talk about the importance of finding like-minded community. Even when you're trying to go it alone, it's always important to find your people and to build your tribe.
So is your family supportive of the path that you're on?
Yes and no. My mom thinks I should be using my college degree and I should be out there making like $100,000 a year. And she doesn't realize that an anthropology sociology major isn't going to make that kind of money generally, unless they go to grad school and take on even more debt. And they're supportive. They think that all the work that I've done here is great. They really enjoy coming up and visiting and everything. But at the same time, they're concerned that I won't have the means to support my wife and my son, which are legitimate concerns. But I put my faith in the Creator to take care of me. So even if I don't have everything that everyone else might have, I'm not really worried at the end of the day. I know I have food on the table. I know I have a shelter. I know that, you know, I'm going to move on day by day. So I don't really worry about it. But yeah, overall they're supportive, but they also question why I'm doing it. And they're much more supportive now than they were in the very beginning. So.
Well, and I wonder, you know, part of the key of life is finding your tribe, right? We all need to find our people that resonate with us. And so do you feel like you've found a group of like-minded people that support, you know, the life you're trying to build?
Yeah, I think so. It's a group of local farmers up here. And we have actually quite a few younger farmers that came to this area and started organic farms or are working on organic farms. And actually, some of them are older, too. But there's the Pennsylvania Association for Sustainable Agriculture. So when I first came up here, the owner, Al Benner, had told me about this organization, said you should go to one of these meetings. And we're actually the only local group out of all the PASA, which is Pennsylvania-wide, that has regular monthly meetings with a potluck and stuff, and we actually do things in the community. We did a mural downtown. But anyways, I had met these people at this first potluck dinner, and, you know, once I had met them, I started hanging out with them more and started developing more of a relationship. And, you know, we all have that common thread of wanting to grow good, healthy food, not only for ourselves, but for our community, so we can improve our community and create some, you know, better economics in our community, create more food stability for people in our community, and give them more nutrient-dense, healthier food so that their health is better. And so we see that as doing, like, the community a service, and we're all dedicated in that, you know, same mission. So I have found those people, but at the same time, even amongst those, I'm still quite a bit different. So in certain areas of my life, I'm still, like, floating it on my own. But, yeah, you know, there's a group of people that I really resonate with here, and we all get along well. But there's still differences between us. And
I think that's the challenge is, you know, when you step outside of the norm, if you step outside of the story that everyone's been taught. And it's interesting because, you know, I've been doing these interviews for 6 weeks, and one of the themes that's come up over and over is I had to first realize that everything I'd been taught was incorrect. And then I had to re-educate myself in ways that would be actually healthy. And so I hear that over and over again, and yet you're still considered the outliers. And that's got to be a lonely place in some ways, because I would imagine that it would be tempting to look at, you know, people buying into the corporate culture and getting a car and getting a house, and you start to think, am I missing it? Or do you never question it? I mean, I guess I'm asking two questions at once. Is it lonely being out there on the fringe? And do you ever feel yourself wondering, should I just buy in and join the crowd?
Well, I mean, at times it can get lonely out there on the fringe, but for me, not really. It's very far and few between because I've always been a person that was swimming upstream, so I've always I've dealt with that ever since I was young. You know, I had people that made fun of me in school, and you know, that were jealous of me because my athletic talents and my academic talents. Yeah, you know, so I've always received like criticism from the outside, and so I've always just like, in order to avoid that negativity, I kind of just like shut myself off from them or ignored them. So I've always kind of had that loneliness type of thing and just do it on my own. I don't really care what anyone else thinks, because as long as I'm feeling good about it, that's all that matters to me. And even with those type of people, you still meet people along your way that encourage you in your journey and like really support it. Like for you, for instance, you really like what we're doing up here, and you know, and your husband Chris, he came and helped us on the farm yesterday. He's like, oh, I love this, I wish I could spend the summer out here and learn. So much different than California, there's so many trees and it's really cool area, you know. So that type of stuff is really encouraging. And as far as like the materialism goes and like the classic American dream type thing, no, I don't really desire a brand new car. That was more like my 16-year-old desires, you know, when I first got a car. I wanted to have the fastest car in school, Ford Mustang, which I got, and I had the fastest car in school. I built an engine for it and everything, but you know, all the money that was spent on that car could have been used for better things, or I could have put in the savings and had some savings, you know. So I don't miss that at all. And in fact, like, it kind of makes me sick to the stomach sometimes to think about, you know, people that appear to have lots of money. They really don't. They have lots of debt, and they're swimming in their job day to day just to pay off the debt that they've taken out to buy brand new cars and brand new houses. And to me, long term, I'd rather be debt free, which is what one of the main goals I came up here for, was getting that piece of property and then building a house without taking a mortgage, even if it's small. And simple, so I wouldn't have to be debt free. So I would have that security. I don't want to have to rely on a job every week to make sure I pay all my bills, so my property doesn't get foreclosed on or my car repossessed. You know, I traded a rifle and some ammo for my one car, and I bought my other for $300, and I know how to work on them. So, you know, I have two cars. And most people spend maybe, I'd say, probably $15,000
at least,
if not more, on a car. I'm just saying average. If you take the average of new and people that buy used cars, maybe around $15,000. You know, I have two cars for under $1,000 initially. And yeah, I put some money into them, but it doesn't bother me at all. As long as I have a place to stay, I look for a place to stay that's dry, heat in the wintertime, food on my plate, and love amongst my friends and family. And if I have those things, that's what really makes me happy. Having a fancy car is just, you know, surface materialism. It's not going to make you happy in the end.
If you're just tuning in, I'm back in the studio today, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, sharing with you another story from the road. Today, we are coming to you from Honesdale, Pennsylvania, and I'm having a conversation with Dave and Christine Campo from the Old School Farm, a place that I came across because I was visiting our friend Clark, who's been working there as an intern this summer through a WOOF program, which is something I always encourage my students to do, is to look into this willing work on organic farms. They're all over the world, and the you can find these different places where you exchange room and board for working each day on the farm or wherever you are and learning a lot of new skills. So when I was visiting Clark, I got to talking to Dave and Christine and realized that they are living this beautiful, authentic, meaningful, honorable life, and I really wanted to share their story with you. And one of the things that I noticed as I traveled across the country is that there's clearly something deeply spiritual about farming. Maybe it's because you're so close to the land. You're witnessing every day the beauty of the sunrise and the sunset and of the earth and the plants and the animals, and you're witnessing up close the miracles of life. I think it's difficult to be that close to life and not feel this strong sense of spirituality, of faith. There's a lot of this strong commitment to God and family in every one of the farming families that I came in contact with. And Dave also speaks with great conviction about his Christian faith and values. So in this last part of our conversation, we discuss his perspective regarding our role as stewards of the planet and our rights and responsibilities as citizens of the United States.
Like, if we look at the animals and stuff, it's obvious that humans have control over animals and plants. We're not, like, necessarily subject to them. They're more subject to us. We can domesticate them. We can raise them. We can do what? We can breed them. We can do all kinds of things with them. Same with plants. So, like, it seems to me like the natural way things are is that humans are stewards of the earth. It's just that we've perverted our purpose from going and making the earth a better place and replenishing it and building it up and be fruitful. Multiply isn't just about children. It's about doing it in every aspect of your life. Like, you know, you want to be fruitful and multiply. You want to sow love so you can reap love, and you want to sow more plants so you can reap more plants. You want to keep creating more and more of beneficial things. And I think the big perversion is that we've gotten into this materialistic society where it's all about ourselves. And then when we lose sight of that true purpose, that's when, you know, things start going bad. And I think people, when they look at like land ownership and property ownership, that's not the inherent problem. It's what people are using it for and why they're using it the way they're using it. So if you own property and you're using it all for selfish reasons, like you want to just mine the crap out of it and you don't care what washes downstream or to other people's property, you know, that's a selfish, unrighteous thing, in my opinion. And your what would you say it? You're like pimping out your land for profits for yourself for short-term gain, and you're not really going after like what your true purpose is, which is, you know, to make that land more fruitful, make it produce things that are good, you know, instead of just stripping it for what it's worth.
Would you recommend this path, this life you've chosen, to your peers?
Absolutely. I mean, if that's what you want, you know, but you really have to decide what you want in life. And I would say the most important thing is to figure that out first.
But can you know when you're 25 really what your life is about forever? I mean,
no.
How have you changed from 25 to 32? And I keep asking you multiple questions.
Well, I don't think you can decide 100% what you want in totality, but I think you can decide what types of principles you're going to let govern your life. Like, are you going to care more about your neighbor and doing good things for him and loving your fellow humans? Or do you care more about yourself and your materialism? So I think if you can figure out that, hey, I don't really want to be steeped in this materialism, and I want to, you know, be more loving towards my neighbors and live a good moral life, a righteous life. I think if you make that decision, that's like the most important decision to make at those kinds of ages, is to make a commitment to that. Doesn't necessarily mean you have to go into the field of farming, because, you know, we need good scientists with those moral values. We need good doctors with those moral values. We need people in every type of profession that's beneficial to mankind in those professions. So farming is not for everyone. If you feel drawn to the land and you feel a connection with plants and you want to grow that food and you want to experience being able to walk out to your gardens and pick all the food you need for dinner and then even maybe have enough to put up all winter and eat out of your freezer or canned goods, and that's something you desire, then yes, I highly recommend it. I wouldn't hesitate on it. And even if you're not sure about it, I would say it would definitely be a good idea to maybe take 6 months, or even if it's only 3 months, but, you know, anywhere from 3 months to a year, go out, find a farm where you can work for room and board and maybe a small stipend, and experience it. You'll know pretty much right away if it's for you or not. But also, I would warn against that, is because some farms tend to, you know, not all farmers are good moral people either. Some of them like to take advantage of free help. So you have to find a farm where they have these values that I'm talking about caring about their other humans, instead of just looking at someone as just like a piece of machinery, like, hey, I'm going to go make them work for 60 hours and they're only going to get room and board. Because you can get taken advantage of on farms too. You know, you don't want to let that be the end-all, be-all of your first experience. If you run into a bad farm and it's more of like an issue in dealing with the farm owners or the people that work there, then I would say, hey, try another one. I know lots of people that have jumped from farm to farm until they finally found a place where they could stay long term and really get the experience. But so I would recommend it to people, and I highly recommend considering the idea of debt and whether you want to be living in debt the rest of your life with a 30-year mortgage that a lot of people never pay off, that you could lose at any time if you lose your job, and think a little more long term about security and that kind of thing for you and your family. So I definitely would highly recommend it to people. For sure.
So you don't necessarily see a return to the earth sort of movement, that everyone should be coming out and growing their own food. Because I guess I assumed that you had chosen this life thinking this is the way that life should be, that we all should be growing our own food and living off the land. But that's not necessarily what you're thinking, huh?
Well, I think everyone should at least grow a small amount of food, but realistically, I just don't think it would be that beneficial for our society for everyone to turn into farmers, because then what other kind of production are we going to have? You know, what other kind of, you know, technologies will we have? I think you need different people in different professions. Even if you go back to the ancient cultures, you had tent makers, you know, you had farmers, you had actually doctors, and you have different professions. And like I was saying before, people are born with different talents. They have slightly different purposes. So I don't think it's every person's talent to do that. But I do think we need to get back to the land, in the sense that we need to think about where our food is coming from, how it's produced, and how that's affecting the earth that provides us with the sustenance that we need. So I think we need to be back to the land in that sense, and just be more consciously aware of how we're affecting our environment and those type of things. But I don't think farming is a profession for everyone. I think we need people in all sorts of professions. But I think we need to, you know, get back to the core of morality and loving your neighbor as yourself. You know, it's called the golden rule. I think that's the most important thing, but also realizing that, you know, the earth is what sustains us. So we need to, you know, be aware of what we're doing to the earth, no matter what profession we're in.
So would you call yourself a farmer? Would you say that's my profession? Or how would you identify who you are at this point in your life at 32?
Well, I would consider myself more as a handyman because I'm not just farming. And unfortunately, I wanted to come up here and focus a lot more on farming and really like dialing in like crop rotations and production and this and that. But the type of environment that I'm working in here is on a hobby farm and with the owner that has all these other types of projects for his other businesses and stuff that I have to work on. I haven't been able to focus on that. So yeah, I know a lot about growing food and farming, but I wouldn't consider myself a professional farmer because I'm really not getting paid off just the crops that we grow and sell. I'm getting paid to manage this whole property and do all these other projects as well, a lot of them which involve construction and other, you know, skills that a lot of handymans have. So since I'm utilizing such of those skills, I'm looking at myself, yeah, I'm a farmer, but I'm also like a handyman at the same time, and I don't consider myself a professional farmer. I think to get to that point, I would need to be making my whole living off of selling the crops. So,
is Renaissance man a fair assessment?
Maybe. I don't know how you're defining that term. I don't know exactly what a Renaissance man is. So
I always consider a Renaissance man as someone who can go into many areas successfully. You know, building a pizza oven, growing crops, working on the house, helping midwife the birth of his son, playing the guitar. I mean, I see the life that you've created here, being able to work on cars. You're an artist, you're a scientist, you're a farmer. I mean, to me, that's a Renaissance person that excels in many, many areas.
Yeah, I guess that would be a fair term then. But, you know, the one problem with being a Renaissance man, per se, is, like, you might not become a great master of any one thing. As they say, jack of all trades, master of none. So it's, you know, I don't know. That's kind of how I feel about myself. I know how to do a lot of different things, and I can get them done, and I'm very good at improvising and being creative, even in, like, mechanics and stuff when I need, like, I need this car to run right now, and I don't have the right stuff, but I can make it happen with what I've got available. And, you know, I think those are good survival skills and everything like that, but I would like to master like one area at some time. And right now I've been working on studying a lot of law, so I'm hoping to become more of a master in learning and applying the law. So that's a whole nother area of topic.
And that's phenomenal.
It's really fringe type law stuff that you wouldn't hear normally in most places, but it has to do with, you know, it's all constitutional stuff and freedom and getting back to like what the true purpose of the government was created for in this nation, and getting away from this more to move towards totalitarianism, where the state, you know, wants to license you for everything and control everything you build and do. And, you know, it's just not the way America was supposed to be. It's supposed to be a land of freedom. And today I feel like we're not that free. So that's why I was called to the necessity of studying the law. And since not many people are doing it, I feel like that's an area that I need to master so that I can become the best teacher and help inspire others to learn and apply the law so we can win our nation back and, you know, get government out of our lives, you know.
I mean, and I can't imagine any place more beautiful to be in the present than sitting here with you guys today under your freshly harvested garlic, listening to the roosters and looking out over this beautiful, green, lush landscape. Thank you so much for talking to me today. Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX.
Early in the morning, a farmer's day begins. So much to do, so little.